Time gap. He's Jules. London's on lockdown, but we press on even through tier 4, 5, 6, 20, 11 million. Here we are. Here we go. We got a packed show for you. We'll be talking about all the crazy stuff happening in the Premier League. United and Liverpool recording huge wins. Spurs losing. Barcelona drawing. Plus, we're going to have Serie A. And, of course, your friends at Paris Saint-Germain. Yeah. Another top-of-the-table clash. But we're going to start in the Bundesliga because it was Bayer Leverkusen against Bayern München. You like how I did that? Yeah. Sehr deutsch. And what happens? Bayern won. Usual clockwork efficiency. Now, we're joined now by Jan Åge Fjørtoft, who's going to help us sort through this. Jan, at one point when Peter Boss's team took the lead with a great Patrick Schick goal, I thought, oh my goodness, are they going to do this? Are they going to do this? And then, of course, they gift them a goal. But I don't think it's as simple as just Bayern saying, oh, the usual Bayern way, they press on. They actually won the expected goals battle for the first time in 7 games. Did they play better, or was it just Joshua Kimmich coming on and changing everything?
Well, it helps to get Kimmich back. I mean, just his presence seems to help them. I was one of the guys who said early doors when Kimmich was, I think he was at that time, and I bluntly say it, I think he was a bit overrated. Not in terms of that he was a bad player, not at all. But they wanted to make him to a Philipp Lahm after 5 minutes for Bayern, and I didn't like that. Now, I see when I look back, I was wrong. Kimmich is a fantastic player and he will be a leader in that team and for Germany many years to come. Now, what we learned from Bayern, and I must say, I follow Bayern, I'm getting older. I followed Bayern in 1975 when I saw them the first time. Did I learn anything? I just learned that what I have learned was confirmed. Because you were sitting there like a neutral. I was happy that Eintracht Frankfurt won in Augsburg, so I didn't care. But I was so excited to maybe see a title race in Germany this year. But then slowly, it's 1-0 Leverkusen, and you think, will they score before halftime again just to kill all dreams in Leverkusen and in the rest of the world? Yes, they did. And we can say typical, and it's old-fashioned to say typical, but there is something with that culture in Bayern that it doesn't stop amaze me. It's just like unbelievable. And I think also for the German players playing for Dortmund, RB Leipzig or Leverkusen, it's getting frustrating. It's getting a psychological thing as well. And when you see the gift that Tah and Radetzky gave them on the first goal, and then in the second goal as well, you think they've gone to the head, by the way.
Jan, one of the other talking points was Leroy Sané, who came on when Kingsley Coman got injured, who didn't start the game, came on and then came off just, 35 minutes later or something like that. Flick finds some excuse saying, oh, yeah, I could not take Gnabry off and this and that. But it's a humiliation, right? For a player like Leroy Sané, you just spent 50 million euros on him. He's arrived. He's potentially a world-class player, and yet, like a kid, like a 17-year-old, you took him off after just over half an hour because he hasn't been good enough.
Yeah, it is, and humiliation. Maybe sometimes there could be tactical moves to do it, but Bayern do that as a plan. There was some language. This was a language. There was a message sent to Sané. They probably tried internal to tell him that. We're not happy with you. You have to do more in training, in the daily work. And with Oliver Kahn up there, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, Flick, Salihamidzic, they know what they're doing. They know this is the Bayern way. If you don't listen to what we tell you in training, we'll do that. And yes, it's a humiliation. Thank God in my career, I've been taken off. I've been so raging towards coaches taking me off in a game. But if they put me on and took me off again, I would probably go into a hand fight with my coach. Because like you said, it's very, very embarrassing. And for Leroy Sané and Bayern knew straight away, that was the headline in Germany in like 2 minutes. The headlines about Leroy Sané. And it's a big message to him. Please do something about it, man, or you're gone here.
But, you know, it's not easy then to move him on again after you spent so much money for him. And I got to say, too, about Sané, he's not a kid now. He's been a kid. He's been young for a long time. He's, now 23, 24 years old. I hope they know, for Bayern's sake, they know what they're doing. Sané, certainly, he went up, he went straight into the dressing room. Then they told him to come back out. Not a good look. But I want to end on the fact that Robert Lewandowski, we know he won the FIFA award, the best award. I don't think many people are going to dispute that. Yeah. And I thought it was kind of sweet because FIFA got Thierry Henry to give him a video call. Now, Thierry Henry was supposedly Robert Lewandowski's hero growing up. He's about 10 years younger than Titi Henry. I just want to know, if you had won the FIFA the best award, who would you want to call you?
We could have called you if you wanted.
Well, I got two football heroes in my whole life, and one I had as a kid, and one I had when I got older to kind of role model me and see what it did. When I was a kid, I was a Leeds United fan. I followed Leeds United, and it was the captain, Billy Bremner. So a tall Norwegian guy, turning into a tall Norwegian guy, had a small little midfield player from Scotland, Billy Bremner. That was point one. When I started playing myself, I had my video recorder doing FF and REW, going forward and back in the video, seeing the runs, and that was Marco van Basten. Marco van Basten was for me, and we're talking about Lewandowski, he's a kind of the new van Basten, but Marco van Basten was my role model. I met him at an event we had, and I'm in touch with him now, which I'm still starstruck.
That's amazing.
And then I realized he was the same age as me. I thought he was so much better than me that he must have been 20 years older, but more or less 2 or 3 years older than me.
That's absolutely brilliant. I think every footballer every tall striker of a certain age at some point dreams of being Marco van Basten. All right, vapid TV folks are gone. Now, podcast listeners, now it's time for the big boy stuff. Jules, you have more to say about Leroy Sané.
Yeah, I think it's a good debate to have, especially with Jan being there with us, because it's not the first time he's had problems at clubs, right? We saw it when he was dropped from the German squad to go to the World Cup. We saw it with Pep Guardiola as well, where many times he was not even in the squad, clearly because of his attitude at training, a bit like what Jan was saying before. But there's a point where he has to decide what he wants to do with his own career, right? Because the talent is there. He's got incredible potential, the pace, the left foot, everything you want. But if he still thinks that he doesn't have to work hard to get to the top, and just because now he plays for Bayern, things are going to come easy, he's not going to go anywhere, right?
No, I take the point in general terms, Jan, that Jules is making, but I was only watching the game on TV. Obviously, I wasn't there. And obviously, Flick maybe didn't like what he saw or whatever, but was Sané that bad? Was he that lazy on the pitch?
But it's not just on Saturday. Sorry, Jan. It's not just Saturday. We've said it many times on the show already. After a lot of Bayern game, we go like, oh, Sané, really? What did he do in that game? He'd been really, apart from, he pops up with some amazing goals now and again, you know, where he opens his left foot and he scores, and because he's so talented. But yeah, most of the time, it's really average.
Yeah, Jan, I want to get your take on this, because if you just break down and think in terms of talent and athleticism, I would argue he's probably, with the exception of people named Robert, he's probably the most talented player on that Bayern team, right?
Well, yes, but he got a role model in, for example, Koeman. How involved is he in the game now for Bayern? He's doing brilliantly for them. But I agree with Jules, he's a great player. I always liked Leroy Sané. That has to be said, talented, very much so. He has also have a problem, or in terms of a problem, that his body language is a bit like Özil's. You know, he's like Özil. When he's bad, he looks so very bad. You know, a brilliant player, but when he's off in the games, he's not doing the right things, it seems. And there are players who are absolutely terrible on the pitch, but they have another body language. So when we, people like us, analyze a game, we say, he did this and he did that, he did a tackle, he was angry at the referee. Leroy Sané, when he is bad, he seems he's not in the stadium. And that is his main problem. Then he makes himself very easy to attack. And I think that annoys also Bayern, because Bayern, I think the great thing about Bayern, not only have they talented player, but they work all the time, great culture, great spirit, great attitude in the team. And at the moment, Leroy Sané, and remember, Leroy Sané wanted so desperately to play for Bayern Munich. That is also need to be said. It's not all players, big players, want to go to Germany. They see that as a backwards move. The people want to go abroad from Germany. So I think that is also a bit about his attitude, yes, and we don't know what's going on in the dressing room, but we can see what's on the pitch, and sometimes his body language also makes it worse.
All right, I'm curious about this. Leroy Sané's parents were professional athletes, correct?
That's exactly, you read my mind. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, can you, and obviously you're in a situation where your son is a professional athlete. Obviously, you know, you played with Alfie Haaland, you know Erling Haaland. His dad was a professional athlete. I'm just curious. I always generally assumed that kids of professional athletes tend to grow up in a, I don't want to say nerdy environment, but an environment where they see their parents' work ethic every day. They tend to be more structured. They tend to get really, really good coaching from a very young age. They often have that mental strength. Can you talk a little bit about that and why maybe it doesn't apply to Sané or speculate a little bit? Well,
but I think that we have to be realistic. Sané have got a great career. He did well for Manchester City as a German international.
No, but so what you're criticizing now, what we've been criticizing is exactly what...
I agree. And that's what is going to be my point, because I think that it goes from being the footballer Leroy Sané to being the human being Leroy Sané. He is a cool guy. He is that kind of guy. I played with his dad. That's how old I am. He played for Wattenscheid. He's his dad. But I think that sometimes what you described, Avgab, the environment, you see that with Erling Haaland. When it goes get tough, he can always ask his dad. He's been in there. He's done it. So I think that is a great, great advantage for him. But still, we all know, I got three kids. It's hard to raise kids. Sometimes if a guy like that, I'm not saying he's in trouble, because we're talking about sports trouble at the moment. Then it's hard to get to him. And I think that we can say that Oliver Kahn and the rest of the boys at Bayern, they are tough guys, but they are good leaders as well. They have tried to talk to him. They've tried everything. They probably talked to his dad and said, can you give him some, help him a bit out at the moment? So I think that we are on a stage now in the development, is in the way they need to raise him, that they thought, well, we just have to humiliate him. And I say that quite clear. I think they did that on purpose. I think they have planned Bayern Munich to do that to him, because, as we said, this is the hardest thing a footballer can go through, to get on and then get off again. The whole fans in Germany will kind of laugh at him. The Bayern Munich fans will say he cost us so much money, he doesn't produce, and so on. So I think this was very planned. And then we are getting closer to the last resort of they've taken him out of that team.
It's an interesting one, Jules, yeah. Because obviously in some ways, I mean, Mario Götze at Bayern, to make an analogy, and obviously it's an imperfect analogy. I think Götze had other issues, but we've been here before with Bayern, where they signed somebody superbly talented. And somehow he doesn't necessarily fit the culture, doesn't produce, doesn't live up to the hype. I appreciate what Jan says about, these guys get obviously more things right than they get wrong. But that is a ton of money to invest in a player in a global pandemic, when, they will probably either have to give Alaba a ton of money or replace Alaba. They're going to have to start thinking about replacing Lewandowski, because he's 33 now, or he will be 33 next year. I mean, that was a big roll of the dice.
Yeah, but I think Jan talked about Kingsley Coman earlier, and I just think maybe there's
bring up the French guy.
Because I think the parallel is quite interesting in the sense that Coman at times, and he had injuries, and Sané, has had injuries and many injuries before as well. But I think Kingsley Coman had to be a bit more mature, and I think what you can gain at Real Madrid, if you listen and you're ready to listen and to change, is to gain that maturity, because that's the mentality there, that's the spirit they have. And if you're receptive, like I think Coman was, and it took him a bit of time, but now he's finally consistent, because I think the consistency is the issue with Sané too. But if Sané doesn't want to listen, I really want to believe that he's so talented that there was a point where he's going to evolve, be more mature, and be a success there. I can't believe one they will give up on him so quickly. He's only been there 6 months. And two, I really want to believe, Jan, sorry, that he will at some point realize the talent that he has and the potential. And if he changes a little bit there and there, he can get to the top.
I just want to put in another thing, is that if you see the Bayern team, And if you go through the Bayern team, and what do the leaders think of the big money spending they have done? Hernandez, he's been doing okay, but he was unbelievably expensive. They got Leroy Sané in. Was it 50 million euro or something they got in? He's on a fantastic contract. And so the track record of Bayern spending a lot of money is not that good either.
No.
Okay, so the leaders of Bayern then will then think, A, that is not good for us because, as we say, it's tough times now and we need to find money to get big players in. And if you don't have a track record, it's harder to find money, point one. Point two, it's also, I think, and I put this in, I'm not saying that it isn't, but it's interesting to discuss. If Leroy Sané doing bad, how was the scouting of Bayern? And if he wasn't the type of player they needed to have in the squad, if he had the trouble with his attitude or whatever, why did they then bring him for so much money? I'm not saying this is a blame game. I'm just saying that is also a part of the mixture here that we should discuss.
That's a good point. They must have known or felt that they could change him because they knew. Course. We all knew what he was like.
But I think the interesting thing too is he was 1 year away from free agency when they went for him.
Yeah.
Not only were they convinced that they could change him, but they were also evidently they were convinced that if they waited and pulled the old Bayern trick of getting a guy as a free agent, as they've done so many times in the past, maybe somebody else was going to swoop in there, or maybe City tricked them into thinking they would extend his contract or something.
Yeah.
Something happened there. And by the way, you can add Tolisso to the list of very expensive Bayern players.
All right.
I know he was injured. He's injured all the time. Still, it's another one. Jan, just to wrap this. Just on Leverkusen, in the end, and I've been Peter Bosz's harshest critic over the years, but
we have.
I have to say, it's not Peter Bosz's fault that, you know, Jonathan Tah and Hradecky
have to play.
Screw up. No, Hradecky's a reasonable player. Tah isn't what we thought he'd be.
Yeah.
But can you just talk a little bit about that? I mean, is it fair to say that without that moment, we'd be having a very different conversation right now? Or do you think that Bayern would have gone on to win that game regardless?
Well, it's interesting. I was watching that game and you got a feeling in second half. I remember I read a biography of Bjorn Borg. I remember the great tennis player of Sweden. And they said, one of my secrets is when I had a set ball or a match ball against me, I played full risk. And I was thinking, when I have a set ball against me in tennis, I play without risk. I'm just lumping the ball back. What I tried to say is that I got a feeling that the leader of the Bundesliga, Bayer Leverkusen, at that time was very, very happy with a 1-1. And at that time in second half, I was thinking, go for it. Use your fantastic top three. Go for it. But it looks like we are playing at home. This was maybe the chance they've had this season to win a game against Bayern and make a bit space on the top of the league table. And that's why I thought that the mentality of the so-called challenges to Bayern in Germany are not good enough. I think Bayern got into their heads. And of course, it's easy to get into your heads when you have a great habit of scoring in the 45 plus 1 minute and 90 plus 2 minutes. That is a quite good habit. But I think Bayern is also, they're a fantastic team, fantastic organization, but they have also managed to more or less mentally crush their opponents.
I want Bayer Leverkusen now in January to go and spend money. They're a very healthy club, even with the pandemic, because I think of the structure and Bayer being there.
Well, and the Kai Havertz money.
Yeah, and the Kai Havertz money and Kevin Volland to a certain extent money. But I think if they get a couple of players there and there, maybe, I don't know, maybe...
Maybe a different manager?
No, shut up. No, that's not nice of you. They were top of the league. We don't like him, but we have to admit that so far we leave him alone. But just, I think, a couple of players, and maybe they really have a shout.
All right, I need to close this out because we've spoken of great strikers in this segment. Henri, Lewandowski, Fjortoft. But Patrick Schick scored a tremendous goal. And I was thinking, when you mentioned Van Basten and Lewandowski, you know how, like, Thierry Henry, of course, as well. You know how, like, you know, you can buy the expensive Louis Vuitton bag, or you can buy the off-brand Louis Vuitton bag from the guy on the street? Is Patrick Schick like an off-brand Marco van Basten.
That's mean. No,
I don't mean it in that way.
Well, you mean a fake? He's a fake.
He's not Marco van Basten.
I know,
but he can do a Marco van Basten impression because he has it's his grace, it's his size.
He's not really number nine like Marco van Basten was, though. So you're comparing, it's a bit, the comparison is a bit already
flawed. Hey, I don't need to hear from you. Let me hear from a real number nine. Can you see the parallel?
I think the good thing about Patrick Schick, and that's why managers want him, that's what Nagelsmann wanted him, he's a quite clever striker. He's not the, I can't see him scoring 20 goals. I don't. He's not, for me, a real goal getter.
Thank you.
But what I like about him, but what I can see is that he's a great striker to have in your team because he is intelligent. He is a I will never say he's a modern striker that doesn't score goals because strikers should score goals. But he adjusts to playing system, and I think that was a big loss for Nagelsmann not getting him. And that was no disrespect to Alexander Sørloth, my fellow countryman, who hasn't turned into a big buy so far. But the goal he took this weekend, that was a brilliant goal. And for me, sometimes you sit and you watch too many games, and I'm getting more and more nerdy the older I get. I watch a lot of games. And then suddenly those kind of goals just appear that makes Michelangelo's David to look like that come on the football pitch, because that is so hard. It's so hard to do what it did.
Yeah.
There is so much balance. There is so much thing to get your body in that position and to demand the ball to go down and so on. So for me, that goal made my weekend. Fantastic goal. Yeah, and it was also to your favorite manager, Bosch. This is the second time they've done a corner trick, isn't it? That they did the same against Hoffenheim. So what a manager he is. He just take them out of his pocket.
You see,
there you go. That. Jan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jan.
Pleasure to be on. Bye-bye, boys.
Cheers,
Jan.
Merry
Christmas.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Bundesliga, because we got to talk Spurs against Leicester. It's another defeat for Spurs. Now, I was really curious to see this because we talked about before how Leicester are so good as a counterattacking side. Yeah. We know Spurs are good as a counterattacking side. Yeah. Something's got to give. And I saw, when I saw Lo Celso starting, I said, aha, Mourinho, he's a clever one. He's realizing that he's going to necessarily have a lot of the ball, and so he needs Lo Celso in there.
And then Dombele. So the two number 10s together.
Yeah, but generally, yeah, Dombele plays number 10. I don't know if he is number 10. But yeah, but you're right.
You see what I mean?
But we have to give credit to Brendan Rodgers, because I thought that they played really well in that first half.
Yeah.
And I think, actually, I know Spurs had the Kane chance, but I thought Leicester outplayed them in the first half. And
Definitely.
I thought they deserved to be in the lead, even though it came down to your boy, Serge Aurier. Or is he not Parisian?
He is Parisian, of course. I mean, he was born in America. But yeah, he grew up, you know, he's one of ours. I just, one, when Ndidi is back and he's this kind of form, it's much easier for Leicester to play the way they want to play in a game like this, because he's just so good. He's everywhere. He covers so much ground. And Papiz Mendy did really well in some games replacing Ndidi, but it's not the same quality.
No. Ndidi's a game changer.
He makes
the people around him better.
Completely. So that's the big thing. The other thing is, yes, of course Leicester were good, but it was, I thought, easy to be good against a Spurs team that had no idea what to do with the ball. I'm sorry, but they could hardly play the ball three passes forward. It was always going backwards. They had no creativity. They had no idea at all on what to do, even Lo Celso and Ndombele. And then Mourinho making clueless changes is not helping. I mean, I know Ndombele wasn't good, but taking him off and bringing Lucas Moura and Gareth Bale, who are, let me guess, very good on counter-attack, but you can't counter-attack because you have
65% of the ball. It's not just counter-attack. Lucas Moura can run at somebody, got fouled. Bale can run at somebody. Bale can conjure something out of nothing.
Yeah, but
we don't need space to go and whack the ball from 40 meters, and that's something that Bale's done in the past. So
yeah, okay. And then we had one free kick, and they're still looking for the ball on the M25.
Hey, not my idea to bring back Gareth Bale. But
I don't understand why you take Ndombele off. Keep the same idea. Keep the same idea of, okay, you have a lot of the ball. Try to put them under pressure, keeping the ball up, and then create something.
See, I'm wondering, because if I'm Mourinho, do I tell my players today, look, in the end, we were beaten by the fact that, you know, the really unlucky with Alderweireld, right? The ball bouncing off his off his leg and into the net. A moment of madness from Serge Aurier, which, like I predicted in the Amazon documentary, famously.
Yeah true.
And that was a difference between us.
Nah, come on.
No? He's not. I know he's not telling himself that, because I like to think Mourinho's brutally honest with himself, but to his players, he wouldn't say that.
No, because then if he's fully honest, he says, okay, we had two corners, and that's it. There's the Kane one and the Son one, and that's it.
I actually feel that, I mean, we focus a lot on Mourinho, whatever, but I actually feel this was a game where maybe it's fatigue or whatever. I thought Højbjerg and Sissoko got overrun off the ball.
Yeah.
And I think they really, really struggled.
But they struggled as well, Gab.
They're two guys having a bad game who you normally have very good games.
But because you're asking them something completely different than what they usually do and what they're good at. They can't play with the ball. I mean, I love them both. And one is Parisian, so hey, Sissoko is my god. The other one has a French mother. He speaks really good French, so his family too. But
Why his name is Pierre Emile?
Yeah, of course. But defending right. and getting the ball back, great. Playing and creating, that's not their stuff.
Tough night for Spurs, but guess what?
They would come back.
I don't think, you know, the table doesn't look great right now compared to where they were, but they ain't out of this.
No, they're not out of it. Right, can you confirm something? It's easier to work a training and put together a counter-attacking team, right? A team that would be very good, especially if you've got the right players, would be very good at counter-attacking team, and they've worked a lot on that, I suppose. It's much harder to put together a team that, when they have 65% of the ball, 75% of the ball, know exactly what to do with it, right? And again, this is not a criticism of Mourinho. It's easier to put together, and especially if it's more your DNA as a manager, then put together a very complicated, effective way of keeping the ball, patterns of play, etc., when you play in the opposition's half with a lot of the ball, right? This is harder to do.
That's a football truism. I mean, I think I could go and seriously debate that, but yeah, sure. I'll take that as a premise.
So, in a way, it's normal that they struggle a bit, because one, you can't switch it on straight like this, on like, okay, today, 3 days after playing, or, you know, after playing most of the season in a certain way, in a game of this quality and this, you know,
but
height.
Here's the thing, though, right? Most of the games that Spurs play aren't against Liverpool or Manchester City. They're against teams that will say, okay, fine, you know, let's park the bus and you come beat us, Spurs. So I don't think Mourinho doesn't prepare for those situations, like they had a lot of the ball in the second half after going a goal down. I think he does prepare for it, but I think we have to give credit to Leicester as well here.
Yeah.
You know, some key players for Spurs had really, really bad days, as often happens. This team is built. This team is simply built a certain way. It's built a certain way. And, you know, look.
And they struggle when they have the ball. They struggle when they have a lot of the ball.
And when they have a lot of the ball, I think the plan is you drop Kane so that, you know, whoever your creative players are, have somebody else with good feet to dialogue with. Son cuts inside. You get the overlap from the fullbacks. When that doesn't happen, also because one of your fullbacks is missing as well, you know, let's not forget that. You know, quality-wise, there's a big difference, right? Then things become more difficult. But
it's the same for Leicester. You know, Leicester, when they have the ball, and we saw them this season.
I don't think we talked about this before, right? Leicester have been very good counterattacking this year, right? Because you have obviously Jamie Vardy and whatever. And they've struggled against teams who've left them the ball. But that's not a Rodgers thing. As
no,
we said before, Rodgers loves having the ball. He had 90% possession when he was at Celtic and obviously before going back to this whole death by possession thing. And I think he's got the quality players. You know, Madison can play with the ball. He's not just a counterattacker.
Yeah, but Vardy is far.
You have Vardy, so you play to Vardy's strengths. Yeah. No. But they have that dimension as well. They have worse players overall than the top six, which is why they're not top six. But I think philosophically, Leicester are right in there. And what I wonder, give me a percentage chance. Can Leicester finish top four? Like, is it realistic this season?
I think it is. So they would have learned a lot from last year, of course, and it was very different to stop and then restart and etc. The Europa League could be an issue, really, because the squad is good and interesting and with a bit of depth, but I don't know how much it would take away from them to have to play Thursday night and Sunday, especially.
Well, that's the thing. At some point, he's going to have to make the decision. Sacrifice one or the other.
Yeah.
Right?
Maybe.
And it's a tough one to make because I think Brendan feels that over two legs in the Europa League, I don't think he's scared of anybody.
No, I agree completely.
But then equally, you know, in the league,
you've
the higher the, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And Soyuncu is going to come back at some point. And you can just imagine the Soyuncu Fofana partnership at centre back. I think this potentially could be the best centre back pair that we have in the Premier League this season. Fofana has been incredible since day one. Even me, who knew him since he was 17, never expected him to be that good so quickly. And literally needed no time to adapt. The only time is when he dyed his hair blonde, they lost two in a row. He said, you know what, I'm going to go back to normal. Yeah. I was like, that's a good idea, son. Just play safe. But incredible. And just if Soyuncu comes back like the Soyuncu that he was last year, I'm like, wow, okay. So defensively, you're going to be so solid. And Didi is there and hopefully he doesn't get injured again. And then I'm thinking, wow, they can go for this. If, like you said, the Europa League doesn't come in the way, if Vardy can score other goals than just penalties, because, you know, he scored 11, 7 of them are penalties. But I'm like, okay, I would fancy them, even on a very weird season, to maybe go really and push Liverpool.
Of course, last time we had a season this weird, all they did was go and win the Premier League.
Exactly, so who knows?
All right, more than enough Mourinho there. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Real Madrid beat Eibar 3-1, but Jules, they were 2-0 up inside of 15 minutes. Then they got pretty hairy in the second half.
They did. They were under pressure massively. Eibar, who still haven't won at home. They only scored one goal before the game against Real Madrid at home, making things very difficult. They were really aggressive. They were going for it. Brian Hill, their left wing back, or left winger, if you want, on loan from Sevilla, was really good. I thought that Kike scored an amazing goal to bring Eibar.
Could have had
game.
A penalty, possibly.
Could have had a penalty, maybe, on that handball.
But hey, it's Ramos and VAR. It can happen.
Exactly. But yeah, you know, and Real Madrid, it's good, I guess, to get a win like this when you grind it out and you show a different aspect to your game after 20 minutes. Pretty perfect to start with.
Yeah, but I think they need to know that they're not good enough to only play for a few minutes. They got to play the whole game.
Karim Benzema, by the way, this is your kingdom, brother. This is amazing. Best player in La Liga right now by far. It was already last season anyway. Barcelona held 2-2 by Valencia as Leo Messi equals Pele's record of goals with a single club, 643. Gab, are you impressed?
Well, I'm impressed with Lionel Messi's career and goal-scoring record. The 643 figure is disputed. Is it 644, 642? I don't care. This is stupid. Single club records. It's record season, right? Between him and Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah.
This is all marketing nonsense. I want to talk a little bit about Barcelona, though, because this is not a great Valencia side. Obviously, they've had issues, even though, you know, he's starting to try to generate something.
They lost Yunus Musa after like half an hour.
Yeah, certainly didn't help. But both Valencia goals were the result of, again, individual errors. And nobody's seen Diakabi and Mingueza.
Why is Griezmann marking him anyway in the first place? Who decides that? Who does? Of course, Ronald Koeman. Yeah,
and not to mention, Diakabi's the size of a building. A very thin building, but a building nonetheless. I thought you saw some signs of good Barcelona. I thought it was interesting. Enough of this sort of pretending that Busquets is your only midfielder.
Yeah,
that's
it's
fine.
It's 4-3-3.
But again, the usual stuff, everything gravitating, one thing, no fluidity. This is what they are right now. But the encouraging thing is, I think they kept going, and I think, you know, they seem to have faith, at least in the way they play, they're professional, towards Koeman. And I think that is something you don't take for granted.
Okay, and when they see Longley coming on after 75 minutes to keep the draw, if you're a player, surely, what was that from Koeman?
Again, I think that's another subplot there. I think Longley
has no idea what to do with substitutions.
Liverpool travel to Crystal Palace and only win 7-0. Jules, that was terrifying. But does it matter that Sadio Mane looked incredibly grumpy after coming off? Or that Egyptian legend Mohamed Aboutrika, arguably the greatest player in history not to come from or never to have played in Europe and or South America, claims Mohamed Salah would like to leave the club?
I don't know. I mean, Mane, I'm not even sure he's crossed a club because it seems like he's looking at someone still on the pitch, whether it's the referee or one of the teammates when he's coming off. Listen, he's played so much, he needs a rest. They were already 5-0 up or something.
Yeah, but why bring Salah? Why not bring on Origi or like one of these guys?
Because then you know Salah is going to score. He's good for his confidence, for the momentum. I don't know if Salah is unhappy. If he's unhappy at Liverpool, he's really hiding it well.
If you don't think he's unhappy, he might just want to have a different experience.
Yeah, maybe. And again, I don't think you can blame him for that. Let's see what happens in the summer. And like you say, he's getting closer to 30 now. So there would be a point where Liverpool have to choose either it's a last big contract for him and he stays at Liverpool with the risk that comes with it, or you move him on and you replace him. You know, Arsenal lose to Everton 2-1, which means they have taken 2 points for the last 7 Premier League games. Partey and Aubameyang were injured. Xhaka and Gabriel were suspended. Lacazette stayed on the bench by choice. Gab, how does Arteta get out of this? Can he?
I don't know. I think this task number one is deal with all the negativity, right? You're not going to get relegated. People are just making jokes about that. Yeah. I thought not playing Lacazette was weird. Maybe he's keeping him. Maybe he's resting him for the League Cup. I don't need to see Joe Willock in this team ever again. But it's weird choices. It's like, all right, you decide you want to bench Bellerin, who's not been good. Fine, right? Okay. But you're short on midfielders. Why do you have to play Ainsley Maitland-Niles at right back? In fact, I might say, why do you have to play him at all? The guy's a central midfielder.
Cedric on the bench.
Play in the middle, and yeah, you have Cedric. You know, I don't understand this. I can tell you this, though, for free, Arteta. As I said, you know my thoughts on the recruitment, on the salary structure, whatever. That's presumably out of his control. Although, I want to say this. You can't have it both ways. You can't make managers genius when the club signs good players and then say, well, no, it's not their fault because they were signed by Edu or whoever else. You can't have it both ways. He raised the point that Arsenal have been unlucky, and I think they have been a little bit unlucky. But then he starts wheeling out all these talk of percentages. They had a 3% chance of losing to Spurs or whatever, and then they lost, and Burnley. Don't bring up statistics percentages. Not because I don't believe in analytics, but simply because it's just a bad idea to do it because the press is just going to make fun of you, right? You go there and you start going fact, fact, fact. You sound like Rafa Benitez.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Press on, work on the training pitch, try to get out of this somehow. But if you're Arsenal higher up, if you're Josh Kroenke, take a close look at what's happening and do an internal inquest. Mm. Rafael Leao scores the fastest goal in Serie A history as Milan beats Sassuolo 2-1, despite the absences of Kjaer at the back, Bennacer in midfield, Rebic up front, and some guy named Zlatan. The average age on the pitch was 22. Jules, how are they getting this done with young players playing well?
Amazing. I mean, I literally has just sat down, and then 6 seconds later, Çalhanoğlu takes the ball from literally the kickoff, runs at the Sassuolo defense. Great ball for Leao, great finish. I'm like, whoa, what's going on?
That was a set play from kickoff that they'd worked on.
Yeah, I'm sure. But I guess you see how Sassuolo starts their game and you think, okay, there's something there, maybe we can explore. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It doesn't matter. Mm. But then I thought they fought hard in the second half, played with a lot of heart and spirit. And they deserve that win, and well done for their first half of the season because it's been really impressive. Cristiano Ronaldo scores 2 and Juventus beat a Parma 4-0. They finally look really good for 90 minutes. Got maybe the best game of the season so far. Is it finally starting to click?
Well, it helps that you play Parma, who were really terrible on the day. But what really helps is Bentancourt turned in a tremendous performance in midfield. They need that. McKennie's remarkable. Yeah. So smart with his runs in the box. Cristiano Ronaldo, by the way, he's clearly getting old and declining because they measured his hang time on the goal. And it was something like...
It was only 3 meters.
No, it was about 10 centimeters less than the goal he scored last year against Sampdoria. So, you know, you've got to watch that. Yeah.
It's still very high.
I'm kidding. It's absurd. No, they're in a good place, but they need to do this again against better opposition and build in it. Manchester City overcomes Southampton 1-0. Jules, this was a more balanced, some might say cautious, Pep Guardiola.
Exactly. Like in the derby against United a few days before that, thinking maybe more, not conceding before scoring. It worked for them. Didn't really work out Old Trafford, I thought they could have done more, but it worked for them at St Mary's. Yeah. Good on them.
The difference is Southampton are a team that pressed the Jesus side of you, whereas United sit. But
exactly.
Hey.
Manchester United, talking about them, annihilate leads 6-2. If they win the game in hand, they will be 2 points off the top. Gab, is it time for Olea Brigade to rethink?
No, it's time for Leeds people United. To think that it's Leeds United. This game could have finished 10-8. It's total randomness. I think you still give United credit because they weren't fazed. They took advantage of Leeds' weaknesses. That's what you do.
When you 2-0 up after 3 minutes, it helps massively, right?
Yeah, by the way, did you know McTominay could finish like that?
No, although I don't think enough was made of Martial's assist on the second one. Incredible.
Oh, of course not. No, it's never enough made of the French guy. Borussia Mönchengladbach's slide continues as they lose to Hoffenheim 2-1. Jules, since October, the only Bundesliga team they've beaten are Schalke, but that doesn't really count since everybody beats Schalke. But the story here, though, is Marcus Thuram spitting at Stefan Posch and being sent off. Out of character?
Completely out of character. Very disappointing from him. Disgraceful, of course. You know, you should not do that. He said that Posch insulted him in French. And he reacted badly, and you can, I mean, I saw it, didn't even VAR to see it. It was very blatant from the live pictures anyway. And sadly, he's been fined 1 month wages, which is €150,000.
Yeah.
He will be banned heavily, probably 6 games, maybe 8 even. But let's hope that he learns from it and doesn't do it again. Speaking of Thuram, Bayern executive Karl-Heinz Rummenigge went on German television as well last night on Sunday night and said that he wondered what would have happened if they had been the other way around. So, Posch spitting on Thuram, and if he had been, so the white player spitting on the black player, we've had another racism debate. It's a bit tone deaf, Gab, isn't it, from Rummenigge?
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with it. I mean, first of all, if anything,
it's
when
really
you...
It's strange.
The spitting is such an extreme thing you know you're not going to get away with that... Yeah. A lot of people's first reaction was like, oh, what could have provoked Thuram was something racist said. And let's be clear, Posch said nothing racist. But it's completely tone deaf. What are you going to do? It implies that every time, you know, a white player fouls a black player, ooh, let's have a racist. No, look, the reason people are having racism debates is because they feel that it is necessary. This has nothing to do with it, as far as we know. So just leave out of it. I don't know. He lost a great opportunity to be silent on this issue. Jules, we had a top-of-the-table clash in Ligue 1 between an injury-riddled Paris Saint-Germain and a soon-to-be-sold Lille, and it finished 0-0. Who will be happier?
Lille, I think, because PSG dominates. It was not great. It was really cagey, to be fair. I tried to see the positive on it, but there's not many. Apart from Presnel Kimpembe, incredible tackle. The best tackle you would ever see in your whole life. Go and check it out. I tweeted it. Gab will retweet it. Whatever you want. It's just amazing. He pulls his hamstring and yet still managed to make a tackle over 2 yards to tackle Burak Yilmaz. Otherwise, Lille would have scored. Amazing, amazing. Ciro Immobile scores a great goal at Lazio, beat Napoli 2-0. Napoli, by the way, who lose Chucky Lozano. Gab, does it mean that Napoli are out of the title race now?
I don't think so. And look, I mean, Napoli in there without Manolas at the back, without Osimhen, without Insigne, without Dries Mertens. You know, you can't spot 4 starters to the opposition.
No, I know. It's not about these games.
They're
losing. You're right.
They're not. I don't think they are at the title. You know, we'll know more on Tuesday because remember the game that where they didn't travel to Turin.
Yeah.
They had to forfeit that. They were given a 1-point penalty. On Tuesday, we'll know more about whether that game will be replayed, whether the points penalty will be taken away. Yeah. I think it's still potentially a 4-horse race.
I really hope so.
Luis Suarez scores twice as Atletico Madrid roll to a 3-1 win over Elche. Jules, this wasn't as comfortable as it looked.
No, it wasn't, Gab. They I think, took a lot of time to get into the game, to create clear chances. They scored 2 goals because Suarez has that incredible sense for a goal. The second one, especially, lovely ball by Carrasco, amazing ball by Carrasco. And then in the end, Diego Costa comes on, scores a penalty that...
Buys himself a penalty there.
But how come VAR allows that? I don't understand.
I don't know. Let's just give
I
up
thought
trying
I saw
to figure
a hand,
that out.
Handball somewhere, maybe. But and then Diego Costa says, Suarez is a bar something.
Yeah.
And then he scores 2, and then I come in and I score 1. I want to score more, blah, blah. Soon we see them playing together. Leipzig are held 0-0 by Cologne and missed the chance of joining Bayern at the top. Gab, are Nagelsmann's boys sort of slowing down a bit? They look tired.
I don't think so. Yeah, they're tired. They have about 6 guys out. They still created plenty of chances. I think they'll be fine. We do have a proper race in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
André Villas-Boas is in the news again. not because Marseille dropped points against Rams this weekend. And by the way, if they win their games in hand, they can still go top of the table.
Yeah, of course.
But he's in the news because of his talking. And he's for a guy who, when he was here in England, didn't often talk very much other than going into extreme detail about tactics, which I personally loved, but which seemed to bore the English press, now he's being colorful. And he's been colorful for a while now. What would he say about Bielsa?
I mean, this one, I think he went over the top and he apologized for it. But he had an altercation with a local journalist from La Provence, which is the local newspaper in Marseille. And AVB clearly feeling that maybe not just even in La Provence, maybe not just locally, but in France, maybe that his work and the good results that Marseille had, regardless of how they played, because they haven't been entertaining at all, neither last year when they finished second either, to be fair. But maybe not regarded in the way they should have been, and got really aggressive to this journalist, standing up literally like head to head, saying like, I'm going to get you, and when I get you, it's going to be bad. And like, imagine AVB with his hair, you know, how smart he looks, threatening someone. It doesn't go in your head, but that's what happened.
It's remarkable too.
Incredible.
Given his background, you know.
How posh the guy is. And then he goes like, I'm going to get you. And when I get you, I'll get you hard. And you're thinking like, come on, AVB, chill out, man. So he's apologized since. Marseille not really doing well, just getting 1 point in the last two league games.
But when I heard that, I thought about, remember the NWA song? Like, take off the gun and the badge. What do you got? You know, a sucker with a notepad waiting to get beaten up by me.
That's AVB.
Good. No, I need to work on that more.
No, that's pretty good. Think about that for next time. Mighty Union Berlin beat Borussia Dortmund 2-1 on Friday. Producer Freddy is very happy, but at least Youssouf Amoukoko set a record, right? And we've bigged him up on this show before.
We did. And like, it's incredible. He's 16 years old. He's the youngest ever goal scorer in the Bundesliga. Let's face it, we kind of knew it was coming once he made his debut in Erling Haaland got scored, because Borussia Dortmund scored goals. That's what they do when he's in there. However, they concede goals.
And in pieces. It drives me mad. And I don't care about that club. But how can you always concede on corners, always in the same way?
I don't know. Like, I give Terzic props, at least for getting Moukoko on the pitch more, because clearly Julian Brandt can't be your center forward.
You're right.
Because he's not a center forward.
Goal. Great run, great finish.
But sorted out at the back, you know what's going to happen here? I think at some point, Mats Hummels or somebody's going to say, or Emerson's going to say, all right, enough of this. And they're going to go and lift the lid on what these people do when they practice both set pieces and defensive movements when the team is attacking.
They can't be practicing.
I don't know.
They can't be.
Seriously, make Mats Hummels player coach. He's about as old as Terzic. Put him in charge.
Did you see his reaction after the game, like going to his flash interviews when he smashed the Bundesliga, you know, the board, the backdrop board that you have on the pitch? He was going and then smash it with his hand. But I mean, I want you to show that on the pitch, not after the game when you batter the other board.
At least Hummels takes responsibility. Mm. Honestly, I know, whatever, man.
Yeah.
Jules, you love your Techers. Time to show Raul de Tomas some love since you're down with RDT.
OMG, my word. If you haven't seen the goal that he scored for Espanyol against Almeria, albeit in the segunda, in the Spanish second division, go and check it out. It's incredible. The first touch first on the halfway line, then the little sombrero, and then the lob from the halfway line. It's just the most amazing goal you would see. Yeah. In the season
it's
so far.
It's shades of David Beckham against Wimbledon, if David Beckham had done the control and the sombrero before.
Exactly,
beforehand.
Man. And sometimes I think it's a shame that Raul de Tomas plays in the Segunda, but hey, you know.
Is he the best player in any second division anywhere in the universe?
Surely he's too good for that. If he can bring Espanyol back, let's go. Inter beat Spezia 2-1 and remain just in second place. But God, this Conte team feels a bit different.
Yeah, look. They're going to get criticized. And you look at this game, like, Spezia are terrible. They're newly promoted.
Terrible.
They have no money. Although, weirdly, they have a squad of about 30 million players. But I think they built two or three chances in the first half. They could have been 3-0 up at halftime. Instead, it didn't happen. But they're playing deeper. They're playing. They're not. You know when Conte was all about, oh, we're going to dominate the opposition. Mm. We're going to be more play with more intensity, high up the pitch. I think now that they're out of Europe, and I think he did that because he thinks that's what you need to do to win in Europe, and he's probably right. Now that they're out of Europe, they're saying, you know what? Lautaro and Lukaku work best when they have space behind them. Hakimi works best when he can just run down the flank. Let me sit deeper, soak things up. At some point, we win the ball back, lump it forward, and then I let my... It's more direct. It's more conservative in some ways. Yeah. They don't leak goals. He hasn't come out and said that, but the shift is very, very evident.
Yeah, you could see
it was before this game, too. And obviously that means there's no room for Christian Eriksen, but hey,
there was no room before anyway. Exactly. So, you know.
Jules, tragic events after Lorient's 3-0 defeat against Rennes on Saturday.
Yes, it was really bad, Gab. One of the groundsmen at Lorient died after he was crushed by the light that you put, you know, straight on the grass after the game to make the pitch regenerated or something. He was 38, father of three, just a few days before Christmas. It's devastating news, really, and you know, we send all our condolences to the club, to the family as well. It's really, really tragic. And finally, Gab, Real Madrid president Florentino Perez is waving the flag for a European Super League once again. Should we pay attention? I mean, we've been there before many times.
No, we should pay no attention whatsoever. He was speaking where they approved the club's accounts, which weirdly Real Madrid actually made a profit of about 300,000 euros, even though obviously, you know, a lot less in terms of revenue projection than they expected. He just talked in general terms about the calendar and the big clubs and blah, blah, blah. He never actually mentioned the words Super League. Yeah. But what he's talking about, I think this is just a battle with UEFA over changing the Champions League format, getting a better deal, I think, again, as ever, for the bigger clubs. And also the long-term, really big battle about the FIFA match calendar and reforming that going forward. That's all it is. Yeah. He's sending out little messages. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Florentino's got bigger fish to fry. Right, that brings us to an end. Shall we come back on Thursday and do this again?
Oh, the last one of the year.
Well, no, not the last one of the year. Last one before Christmas, yes. And we'll be in a festive mood for that. Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.